Starting Overdrive. Real stories of starting over with Red Seaton.
Hey everyone, welcome to Starting Overdrive, where you'll hear real stories of starting over from real people of all walks of life. I'm your host, Reg Seaton. I firmly believe that life is a series of starting over moments. Sometimes, the initial path we create for ourselves isn't the path we're supposed to be on for the rest of our lives. Oftentimes, it takes change beyond our control to be forced upon us in order to align with our true life's purpose. Sometimes, forced change is necessary for greater self-awareness, a healthier lifestyle, and ultimately, our survival. There are unique events in life that force us to let go of our chosen path and watch others find success on that same path without you. This episode's story of Starting Over takes us into the life of singer-musician Scott Holman, also known as Scott Rocker, who was the original lead singer of the chart-topping Nickelback with the guys of the band before they were known as Nickelback, prior to becoming one of the biggest bands in the world. As you'll find out in this episode's interview, Scott grew up in Hanna, Alberta, with the guys of Nickelback, playing and touring in a cover band before the group later changed their name and blew up into superstardom. Scott not only chose to leave the band to start over on his own, but he also knew he had to leave for mental health reasons. As a result, Scott had to watch his former bandmates become one of the biggest acts in music, all the while confronting a diagnosis of bipolar disorder and creating a new career in music that was meant to be for him, aligned with the essence of who he is as a person. Find out how Scott feels today about leaving the guise of Nickelback, how he manages his mental health and lives with bipolar disorder, his advice for people who are struggling with mental illness, and what he's up to today with his new band, Curds and Whey. Join me now as I talk with singer, musician, Scott Holman on Starting Overdrive. Scott Holman, a.k.a. Scott Rocker, welcome to Starting Overdrive.
Starting Overdrive. Thanks for having us, man.
Well, I've been looking forward to this conversation for a while, and your story of starting over is really important, especially on a level of dealing with a unique set of circumstances and dynamics beyond your control.
Yep.
So let's get right into it. You're from Hanna, Alberta?
Hanna Banana. Worth the drive. That's what the slogan for the town is.
So that's sort of east of Red Deer, Calgary?
Yeah, east of Drumheller. If you know where the Tyrrell Dinosaur Museum is.
Oh, yeah, where all the fossils are. Nice country.
Try and give that landmark for people, and they know what I'm talking about usually.
So you were the original lead singer of Nickelback before they were Nickelback in a band called Village Idiot. Is that correct?
That is correct. Chad and I formed the band probably in 92, I guess. I had gone back to high school to get a better English mark, and I started hanging out with Chad a lot more. He ended up dropping out. So I went to get a better mark. He dropped out. And we started this band. And Ryan Peake was just finishing up at Red Deer College with a music degree. And Chad's brother Mike already had a band on the road called Goodbye Charlie that he dismantled in order to start playing with his brother. So Goodbye Charlie, the rhythm section, drummer and Mike on bass, joined us. And we went through a lot of different names. And Village Idiot was a name that Ryan Peake had in a band in Hanna a few years prior. But none of the promoters liked the name. So I think for a long time we were known as like Point of View. I think we had like three different names. Like we went on the road for a guy called Attila the Hun, if anyone remembers that name. Back in the day, booking B-Circuit bands around BC and Alberta. And he didn't like our Village Idiot name. So I think it was Point of View. But if anyone ever asks, according to us, we were a Village Idiot.
At that time, were you guys trying to write original music or were you guys just cover? What was the vision of the band at that time?
We were strictly just a cover band. I mean, we did a couple like blues songs where I would just impromptu lyrics and, you know, just be silly. But no, we were trying to follow down the road of Goodbye Charlie, who was a cover band, and we could make money doing that. So we were just going for, we needed a job and we wanted to like learn our chops and just get out on the road and have some fun. It really had nothing to do with writing.
So what were your dreams as a singer back then?
probably why I never went very far is because I didn't really have dreams. I lived every day in the moment. I really never saw a future in singing in a rock band. It was more of like, this is a way to extend my high school partying into a job where I just drink and be silly. So, I mean, it was good for a while. And then it's like, I'm killing myself. I can't do this for a living. When you start doing it 5 days a week as your job,
it becomes a job.
It starts to get old. And I never saw the future of playing originals because I always, I guess, doubted my abilities to write and doubted my abilities, like as a singer, to be someone that would captivate an audience. I always had to be just crazy on stage and people would think I'm good because I'm well-rounded rather than a really good singer. And now I've developed that muscle over the years and I'm actually a pretty good singer now. And now I'm too old to jump around like an idiot. So I'm no longer the village idiot.
That's good to hear, brother.
But yeah, long nights, drinking, drugs. It's really no way to spend your life.
Well, I want to get to Curds and Whey in a few minutes because that's what you're doing now. And you guys just released a song called Honky Tonk Disaster. Is that correct?
You got it.
Great fun tune. Where can people find that?
All the digital outlets should have it. If you go to YouTube, you can find it for free. It's out there. I think it's on at least like 150 digital outlets. So if you look for it, you'll find it. You might not find it on the radio yet. We're working on that.
So was Chad singing at the time or were you the sole singer? How did that work with you guys?
It was mostly me and Ryan. Ryan's dad is a bass player and a harmony singer, a really good one. And Ryan kind of grew up aspiring to be like his dad. Although Ryan was a lead singer at times, Ryan really gravitates to harmony singing. He's amazing at it, and people around the world can vouch for that. But me and Chad together, we didn't sound that good together. So, I mean, we wouldn't discourage Chad from singing, but, you know, our sound man would be like, it's you and Ryan. That's the mix. So Chad might have sang like gang vocals on choruses and stuff like that, but that's about it.
So did you guys just play around Hannah or did you travel around Alberta, BC?
Yeah, no, we were around BC, Alberta, like just the shittiest bars that you can imagine and then pack up and drive 20 hours to the next shittiest bar. It's like, can't we just play like an hour down the road? No. We would start in Dawson Creek and go to Lethbridge.
Cold.
Yeah, it's seriously like a 20-hour drive probably.
That's a long haul.
Yeah, and that's the crappy gigs that we would get. That's because your name's Village Idiot. No one wants to book you guys. Let me call you Point of View. I'll get you some more shows. You know, it's like that. But anywhere we went, people loved us. But yeah, the gigs were like, they weren't few because we were working pretty hard, but they were long hauls in between. And that's kind of what did me into, I think.
So you were the original singer for what largely went on to become one of the biggest bands in the world. What was it in your life that really prevented you from being part of that?
Well, I mean, if you want to talk mental illness, I just couldn't handle the lifestyle. You just start seeing your mental breakdown happen. You got to catch yourself before you go too far. And I saw my out. My girlfriend was moving to Toronto. And the day before, we parked by Chad's place. And we decided to fill up all her stuff the day before because she's going to leave at like 3 a.m. And then her truck got broken into, everything stolen. She ended up staying here a couple more weeks. And I'm like, I'm going to help her out. She needed help. And I needed help. So I moved to Toronto with her and just said goodbye to the band. Done. And the rest, I would just watch from the sidelines. I moved to Calgary to go to school eventually. And they would call me up. Hey, we need a place to crash for the night. Do you mind? Nope, no problem. So Nickelback would come stay at our house a couple times, which was fun because they were so poor and they weren't playing covers anymore, so hard to make money. They would bring me in to play half the night with them and sing covers, and then they would finish the night doing Nickelback originals. So I got to do that twice, which was nice. And then I've played with them 3 other times. So I have played in Nickelback physically about 5 times.
And you went to Germany, didn't you?
I did, yeah. K6.
And what's it like playing for the bigger crowds?
It's pretty cool. I mean, there's a lot more prep in your mind that you got to do beforehand. But then once you're out there playing, it's not a big deal. You don't really see past like 100 rows. So
do you have any regrets now?
Well, yeah. I mean, I usually twice a day, like once when I wake up and once right before I go to sleep, to remind myself I don't play in one of the biggest bands in the world.
Well, that's an interesting thing. How do you start over from that?
Here's how my music career works. Somebody asks me to do something, so I say yes. That's been my whole life. I don't really start the push initially myself. Someone always approaches me and like, hey, I got these skills. I got this. I got these songs. Do you want to start a band together? Okay, sure. And I've done that twice. First with a band called Auto Switch and now with Curds and Whey. So with Curds and Whey, Greg approached me. I was at my 40th birthday party and people were playing guitars and stuff. And I picked up a guitar and I played a song. A couple days later, he was like, hey, I saw you play that Tegan and Sarah song and you sang it in the key that they wrote it in and we should do music together. 6 years later, I'm still playing in Curds and Whey. But without that, I wouldn't be doing anything because making music is easy. Promoting music is hard. Just like the Beatles said, once they hit, everybody started a skiffle band. There's a skiffle band on every corner. Times that by 50 years now, 60 years. There's so many bands and so many good bands. There's lots of room out there for good music and good entertainment, but it's a tough haul doing it yourself.
Well, it is, yeah.
So partnering with someone is always when I say, okay, if someone's willing to take on half of the responsibility, I'm willing to put my part in too. But doing it all yourself, just so much there with a do-it-yourself band. Like, we don't have any companies. We don't have publicists. We have no one helping us on our journey right now, except ourselves and our own determination. But the success that we've had just keeps propelling us forward.
Well, I want to go back to, you mentioned mental illness. I want to go into that for a second and just ask you, what does that look like in your life?
Usually for me, I get manic. I don't get depressed like a lot of bipolar people. I always get manic. And that turns into a lot of different things. Turns into like abuse, violence.
Well, what was it about yourself that you had to confront in order to deal with it?
I don't know if I'd go that far. It's more of medication. If you're a bipolar patient, someone is like a doctor has looked at you and said, oh, okay, you're bipolar. Then they can start treating you for that. And that's the problem with Vancouver is there's so many people undiagnosed with their different mental issues that don't get the opportunity for help. I was lucky enough that I can bottom out far enough and I have people around me that love me enough that can go, that's not Scott. What's going on with him? And I got help. But it usually doesn't happen as fast as it did for me being diagnosed. And that's the problem here in Vancouver. It's just not enough people get put in front of the doctors so they can figure out what's wrong with this guy. What is the deal?
It's been like that for a long time, too.
Yeah, it's really sad and only getting worse. I mean, we live in one of the nicest neighborhoods downtown, and the street corners are filled with people sleeping on them at night.
Yeah, it's tough to see.
And it's sad. And some of those people are like, they're a diagnosis away from getting help. I'm very fortunate that I did get help and it worked out for me.
When you were younger, did you understand what it was you were dealing with?
No, not at all.
How did that manifest as a problem for you, like as a singer in a band, for instance?
Well, I mean, it's okay to be manic and crazy if you're in a band. It makes sense for a long time. And then you start to break down.
That's when you had that moment, oh, I need help.
Yeah, well, I never reached out for help. I was forced into help.
Okay, that's interesting. We had a conversation before where you mentioned to me before that you were forced into help. Did that make it any easier, the fact that you didn't choose, that you're actually forced into it?
Probably the last thing that you would ever think is that you have a problem. You always think it's somebody else's problem. But just in my circumstance, I fell hard enough that, you know, I wound up in the hospital. So I got the help, but I would have never went looking for it myself.
Let me ask you this. Can you put into words what it was like watching Nickelback become Nickelback, knowing you were at the center of it at one point?
Yeah, no, that's a really wacky thing. It's hard to describe that one. I remember Gabe Sinclair, the original drummer that we had that left Goodbye Charlie to play with us. We eventually let him go because Brandon Kruger, Chad and Mike's cousin, came in and played drums. phenomenal drummer. So there's about three or four people in the world that are in the same spot that I'm in with Nickelback, where you can go, oh, I could have been in that band. But I couldn't have. Chad was the brilliance that created that. And me staying would have never given Chad the room for that. So the world can either love it or hate it. But me making room for Chad is what made that band. I really have nothing to do with it. So I can rest assured to myself and go, well, yeah, but I'm not in the band. But if I was, they wouldn't be that band. Gabe, as the drummer, can be slightly different because he was really good. And he could probably look at it differently. But he would call me up and say things like, Chad's face is on a bus here in Lethbridge. But I'm like, Gabe, I get it, man. I get it.
Well, that's good that you weren't alone.
Sometimes you love it and sometimes you hate it. I'm super proud of them. And I've always been proud. And even back in the early days, like, they would still like call me up to come and sing and shit. So I did feel left out of the party, but I left the party.
And that's easier to accept, isn't it?
A little bit.
I did read that Chad said that he learned a lot from you as a frontman in how to be a frontman.
Yeah, it's funny.
Can you accept that compliment?
I can. I mean, because he says it as a joke. This is how he used to introduce me to people. And this is after he's a big star, too. He'd pull me up and whoever's there, and he'd be like, big name people. I can't remember, like, big Canadian icon management and business people. He taught me everything I know about fronting a rock and roll band. He'd preface it like that at the end.
Well, how does it make you feel now?
Oh, no, that's good. I got it on my resume.
Was there ever a point where you actually walked away from music?
Yeah, totally. Totally.
How did you find your way back?
Well, like I was saying before, somebody asked me. Somebody asked me to do something. Yeah, I mean, I did a solo thing. No, I didn't play any shows, but I just did some recordings when I got out of Auto-Switch, because we lost a ton of money touring. Members are quitting, so we had to dissolve the band. But I still had some songs in me that I wanted to get out. So I recorded a couple songs under the moniker Scott Rocker. All one word. If you put it as two words, a bunch of different stuff comes up. But if you go into the Google and you put Scott Rocker all one word, you get a couple pages of the stuff that I've done. And the one song we had, radio songs, called Set to Explode. And I was certain the song was going to be a hit. And we radio tracked it. I know people don't know what that means. And it cost us about $4,000, $5,000. And 26 stations picked it up, which isn't enough.
Right, which isn't unusual, though.
No, it's a tough road if you're going after commercial rock radio. Getting those ads is the toughest thing to do. You can get like a little feature spot on a Friday night or a Sunday night or something, or an indie spotlight, but they only have about spots for 2 to 3 every couple weeks.
So there's just no way of new music getting out there.
It's really tough in mainstream, really tough. Because as you're trying to put your song out there and you think it's really good, like back in the day when I was doing it, Sum 41 would come up one the same week. Finger 11 would have one. Our Lady Peace would have one. And Nickelback would come out with their new record that has 5 or 6 singles on it. That's who you're competing with for those 2 spots. And you're like, you're not going to get them. You're just not.
So what do you do? How do you do it with Curds and Whey? How do you get that visibility?
You got to start small. Yeah, you got to start small. It's different with things now because there's CBC radio, which is really helpful to different kind of roots and different kind of music that isn't on mainstream. And there's also like lots of digital now and online, where there wasn't as much before when I was trying to do it with the Scott Rocker singles. So it is different now. If you can get interest other than mainstream, then you can eventually convince the mainstream that they should be looking at you too.
I follow a number of musicians and names on Facebook, and I've actually seen name people who have had big careers having to start over. One guitarist just made a new video, put a bunch of money in it, and barely get any views on YouTube.
Yeah.
It's a tough time. And this is like a name person. So I wish you all the best on that. It's a tough gig, especially in Vancouver too. Vancouver scene's pretty tough, isn't it?
I'm not sure in terms of radio and stuff, because we're not really pitching our songs to mainstream radio, at least here in Vancouver. I mean, we play for our friends. That was kind of Village Idiots and Nickelback's whole philosophy in their early days, is like, come out and party with us, and we're all friends. We don't play all that often, so we don't saturate ourselves to our fans. We only play like 3 or 4 times a year here. And that way people, they can come every time. You can't play once a week. It's not the type of city it is anymore. You used to be able to like play in front of a crowd. Now you got to bring it. You got to bring your crowd every time.
I think you saw it too, that article on the Town Pump. Back in the day, that was a great venue. There was that, there's a Commodore, there's a lot more venues. But yeah, once a week if you're lucky.
Now, there used to be a lot more people going out to the bars. And there's a couple philosophies of why it's kind of died. But when I hear people say that it's dead, that's when I have to go, well, it isn't dead. We were looking for a venue to do, like, we do this 80s night in terms of, oh, I need to find a venue to do the show at. I probably went through like 30 emails. So when people say that there's no clubs here anymore, it's like, well, there is. You got to make your own party.
Does Kurds and Way feel in some way like the early days of Village Idiot? Is there a relatable similarity there?
I guess what we do are like, we do an 80s cover thing. We just did like full on 80s. It's so much fun. I guess that could feel a bit like the old Village Idiot. I usually make sure the songs are songs I know, so I don't really have to prep that much.
Makes it easier.
Yeah. I've always had this ability to remember lyrics and melody. The melody's easy, but the lyrics are the hard part. But for some reason, my brain can remember lyrics. So it's easy for me to go do cover gigs.
How do you regulate your life today?
I do have a daughter. So I guess that regulates me and my wife. Family keeps you grounded.
And age.
And getting old. Yeah. Waking up and going, hey, what the hell is that? Why does this feel like this? Oh, yeah, I'm 47.
Hey, I'm 50. 51, actually. I just forget about that. You lose track.
Yeah, but you're looking good.
Sort of. So what have you learned about yourself and all of this as a person with bipolar disorder?
Well, I think I use what I have. I mean, if anyone's ever seen me on stage, they're like, that guy's having more fun than anyone in the building. And that could be mental illness slightly. You know, you got to be kind of crazy if you're a front man. And if you're not, you at least have to have some kind of persona or some kind of edge. I use what I have. I try and have more fun than anyone in the place. People see you having fun, they're having fun. No one can deny that I'm having a good time. And that comes from inside.
For people that are confused by it or struggling with it, is it something to really be afraid of?
Well, yeah. If you're not taking medication or anything, totally. You got to keep yourself in check. You fall off the deep end.
What do you mean by that?
I can wake up like 2 weeks later or wake up in the hospital. Those are real life issues for me.
How tough is it to deal with that on a daily basis, even with meds?
I don't know. I don't think it's too bad.
No, there's no issue when you're on the meds?
No, no. It kind of screws you up a little bit, bloats you up a little bit. You lose a bit of your dexterity. Like I can't throw a baseball properly anymore. Stuff like that. I've lost a little bit of a dexterity and strength, coordination, but I'm sane. And I'm in a happy spot.
Well, that's good, man.
So I don't mind taking medication, and it's part of my life. It's been part of my life for a long time.
Well, at what point did you get to a place of being able to talk about it without feeling stigmatized?
I've actually always been pretty cool about talking with it. I don't really talk to media people much about it, but in terms of being on the level with people in like serious conversations, I don't mind talking about it at all. I get that from people sometimes saying like, oh, wow, I can't believe how open you are with that. But it's just life. It's just an imbalance. I can be embarrassed that day or week or month or year after I did something super stupid. But at the same time, it's like, that wasn't me. A manic bipolar person can do some pretty crazy shit. And at the same time, the crazy people of the world are the people who change the world. For me, it's all just about making sure I'm taking my medication.
I really appreciate you being vulnerable with this. I've had a brain injury, so I've had to deal with some of that myself. So,
yeah.
It's tough to navigate. I have a seizure disorder, so I take meds lifelong for that.
Yeah.
I've always been open to talking about it, and that's the heartbeat of this show. That's why I wanted to create this show, is for people to be open and be able to share their stories, because I know there are people out there that don't know how to start over. When you've been there, I've been there, and I really appreciate it.
No problem. Talking about your story helps people. That's the bottom line.
So what advice do you have for people who have been forced to start over, either from a condition beyond their control or from something that they haven't been able to get past?
Well, I think first you got to take a look at where your focus is. Are you focusing on something that's completely unreal? Or are you focusing on something that, looking at your life, it points you in that direction? Like young people, for instance, I want to be a movie star. Well, do you want to be a movie star or do you want to be an actor? It's two different things. I want to be a rock star, or you want to be a musician. If you see the future of you as a rock star, that's great. You can have that. But I think a more logical thing for me is to go, I want to be a musician. I want to write good music. I want to stay focused on that. You got to keep yourself in reality a little bit. There's got to be the element of fantasy, but you got to keep yourself in check. They say, I want to be a linebacker for the Stampeders or something. Well, I don't think I'm big enough or strong enough, but if I'm crazy enough, I can go along with that game. But it doesn't make any sense. You got to find logically what you want to do, and then you can embellish it, but see where your path is headed, and then you roll with that. Be real before you go fantasy. I'm not saying you can't dream and dream big, but the first step should be a concerted effort towards something that's real and you really believe. It's kind of where I'm at now. We let the songs and everything dictate the future. We didn't believe in the stuff. We wouldn't keep doing it and keep pushing it. We love what we're doing right now, and everything's coming out pretty good, so we might as well just keep pushing it farther.
Keep pushing it. Scott, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for the call, Reg. curdsandway.ca.
curdsandway.ca.
Thanks for listening to the Starting Over Drive podcast. Join us next time for another real story of starting over. In the meantime, make sure to follow us on Podbean, head to the Starting Over Drive Facebook page and hit the like button, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to our channels, help us grow, and feel free to share your story of starting over. Or even let us know if you relate to any of the issues touched upon in our interviews. You can also find the Starting Overdrive podcast at www.startingoverdrive.com.